for me as like an older athlete, I hope that I can really instill some of the things that I think are really important to the younger athletes, just as it was done to me by, you know, the senior athletes of that time. And then I'm still out here chasing my best performance on the day. And so, you know, just try to go out and achieve that. And then I think I'll be happy with the result when that finally happens. So
that's Olympic rower Will Crothers, and this is Difference Makers, a Christina Walker podcast. Hello, everyone. Welcome back, or welcome to Difference Makers. I'm your host, Christina Walker. And this week we have a very special guest, one of my teammates, Will Crothers, on the podcast. And actually, in order to introduce him properly, I wanted to invite another teammate, Christine Roper, to kind of talk about her experience with Will throughout the years. They have been teammates for quite a while now. And welcome, Christine. Thanks for coming on the podcast. How's it going?
Hello. Yeah, I'm doing well. Thank you. Big Difference Makers fan. So thanks for having me.
Awesome. I wanted to ask you, what has been a story that has really stood out to you, or an experience that you've had with Will that kind of would give the listeners a view of what Will is like, or who he is like?
That's a good question. I don't think I have one story in particular that stands out for me, but like you mentioned, I've known Will for a really long time. I met him during his lead up to the 2012 Olympic Games. And I've always been in awe of him. I mean, he's a very hardworking, fun-loving guy, and he's really easy to be around. And I think he's pretty well known for being annoyingly good at everything. And so, yeah, I mean, I've got nothing but good things to say about him, and I can't wait to hear what you two talked about.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Before we get going here, once again, this podcast is sponsored by Marathon Surfaces, suppliers of rubberized surfacing for running tracks, sport venues, walking paths, and safety surfacing for playgrounds. Now it's time to sit back and relax and enjoy my conversation with Will Crothers. Okay. Well, Will, thank you so much for joining me. Is this your first podcast?
This is my first podcast.
Ever?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, really exciting. I guess I could just jump right to it and ask how you first got involved in the sport of rowing.
Yeah. So for me, it was back in high school in grade 9, a couple of my friends had gotten into the sport, and there was only 3 of them and a coxswain, so they needed a fourth. And I think I was one of the taller guys they could see wandering around the hallways, and so they invited me down to give it a try. And rowing is sort of one of those sports where, you know, as soon as you're going down once or twice, then you see that the crew is kind of relying on you, and so then you keep showing up. And then, you know, we were having a lot of fun and got into the racing season, and we actually went undefeated in our novice racing season, which was awesome. So I liked the physicality of the sport, and then I also liked winning, so I just kind of carried on with it.
Nice. And then at what point did you kind of translate it into being more of a competitive aspect in your life rather than just a leisure sport?
Yeah, fairly early on, I would say. I had a lot of coaches who were kind of knew what they were talking about and knew the directions that were like possible for, you know, some talented young rowers to go. So I was pointed in the right direction from a really young age. And like any athlete in Canada, I had a lot of support in, you know, parents that would drive us up and down the 401 to get to different regattas and, you know, take all of the extra steps to get us where we needed to go. And, you know, that sort of thing really was a difference maker, if you will. So, just having coaches with the knowledge of what the next step would be, and then, you know, parents and volunteers that put in the time for us young kids to get where we needed to be. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, I get very fascinated with parents. And maybe you can probably speak to your parents, but I do think that I find that parents have a very big impact in people who end up being professional athletes. Did you find that throughout your entire journey that your parents have been super supportive of you, or like what has their role been on you as an athlete?
Yeah, for sure. They've been unbelievably supportive for me the whole time, from, you know, the first 5 a.m. wake up to get down to the morning practices at the Kingston Rowing Club, till today, you know, like they always have my back. They're always, you know, very aware of like not impacting my performance negatively by asking me too many questions if I'm tired or, you know, whatever. They've got their finger on the pulse of the rowing world now, so they definitely get it and support me in an unbelievable way. Yeah, I definitely couldn't have done it without them, and yeah, they're just amazing.
No, that's so awesome. Did you ever have to have any of those hard conversations with your parents of like, I mean, you've obviously been to Olympics, then like I think in times like this where it's so close to the games already, like do you ever have to like sit them down and be like, oh, like I need you guys to act this certain way, or do you find that it's kind of ingrained in them and they know you so well that now you can, they can navigate how they interact with you, or have you had to have those hard conversations with them?
No, I think, you know, I think Rowing Canada actually does a pretty good job with that. And especially Michelle Boss, I think she's one of the main liaisons for, you know, making sure the friends and family tickets are all in order and, this, that, and the other with regards to that. So they kind of go through her. And then I think Michelle has actually told a lot of the parents not to ask questions of the athletes as they're preparing. But as I've become more of a mature athlete, I think my parents have noticed that I'm a little more receptive to answering questions when it's sort of crunch time and maybe the stress is on, because they know now that I've sort of been through it and they've been through it now too. You know, like they're the parent of someone who's gone to the Olympics twice. So they, you know, they've got their Olympic level parenting certificates now, I guess. So, yeah, they do a great job, and Rowing Canada does a great job as well, like with keeping the parents informed with what they need to know. So,
and as it being so close to the Olympics already, like, do you find that your sort of mindset and approach with how you interact with people and who you hang out with right now changes compared to what it would be like last year? I mean, I guess last year was also the lead up to the Olympics. So maybe like 2 years ago.
Yeah. I think, you know, the whole quad sort of has its varying degrees of, I don't want to say seriousness, but I guess I'll say seriousness for lack of a better word. But, certainly the gravity of the situation increases with, you know, year one, you know, you're trying to develop boats and sort out who the athletes are in a lot of ways, especially for the coaches. And then year two, it's a bit more of that, but maybe you're trying to hone things in a bit more, and then you get into a qualifying year and then it's the Olympic year. So certainly, you feel the weight of it yourself, and no one has to really ask you to, you know, stop going out on a Saturday night, or, you know, ensure that you're getting the right amount of sleep or drinking the right amount of water or whatever. So yeah, I think for me now, with everything, like the proximity of things is so close now, my decisions are like, my focus is narrowing quite a bit, and yeah, emphasis on performance at all times at this point, for sure.
And do you find that like over the years it ever takes its toll? Like, I mean, you've been in this sport long enough that like that focus, it's not just about leading up to the Olympics, it's your whole life all the time. Does that ever drain you, or do you ever come to a point where you're like, ah, forget, like some of those moments where it's like, I can't do this anymore, or I feel like it's just too much? Or like, how have you been able to sort of navigate that stress on a daily basis and on a long-term basis?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, I think the thing that comes to mind the most is just missing big events in my friends' lives, you know, weddings and, you know, births and all sorts of stuff. Like, as I keep pushing out here in Victoria, a lot of my friends' lives are, you know, developing and blossoming into these beautiful things that I'm getting to miss a lot of those major events. But, you know, I was fortunate to be in high school when we had 2 8s. And so a lot of my friends are actually ex rowers, and so they understand it to a certain extent. Yeah. And they know, they've seen my passion for it firsthand, and so they get it, and, you know, they're excited for what I'm doing, and, you know, they have their thing going on. But that's where it, I think I feel it the most, is just missing major events with, you know, family and friends. And that's probably the toughest part about it. But mm-hmm.
And how do you deal with that?
There's not really a way to deal with it. I'm sure I'm just going to be, you know, when I step away from the sport, whenever that may be, I'll just be trying to make up for lost time, I think. And I'll be, you know, I'll be excited to get to spend some time in Kingston with friends and family, and get to see, you know, their kids who are now going to be like 1 and 2 instead of, mm-hmm. you know, 3. And they'll be on their, you know, 4th wedding anniversary or something. So I'll just be trying to make up for lost time and, you know, reconnect with the people that I really care about, I think. That's mm-hmm. probably all.
Yeah, I mean, I would categorize that as a sacrifice. And I think it's one of those things too, where when you're doing something that you love, then at the time, everything around you that you're missing might not seem like a sacrifice until you kind of are able to take a step back. And, or if you're in the sport long enough, then you realize everybody else is having these certain similar experiences around you that you're not having. And then you realize like, oh wow, I might be a step behind when I end up leaving the sport. But in terms of sacrifice, like, do you find that you've had to sacrifice other things other than just not seeing family or missing those very important experiences? Like, do you see your sport as something that you're sacrificing to do?
Maybe not sacrificing, but certainly with respect to maybe the cookie cutter ideals of like what someone my age might be doing right now, you know, maybe I'd have a job, maybe I'd have a wife and a kid or something. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it does get a little bit like, I look at my life from outside or from an outside perspective and I'm like, oh man, I'm like, I feel like I'm behind. But mm-hmm. I think it's one of those grass is always greener situations, because, you know, I'll catch up with a friend or something and, you know, they're so interested in what I'm doing and I'm obviously interested in what they're doing, but this is really special, you know. And I hear it from so many athletes that have left the sport now and that I'm still friends with and close with, that there's just, you know, nothing quite like working with just a highly motivated group of individuals that are all chasing the same goal. There's very few situations outside of high performance sport where you can get that same feeling every day, where everybody's just, you know, got their spear pointed the same way and everybody's mm-hmm. working towards the same goal. So I don't think sacrifice is maybe the right word, but certainly if you want to, you can slow things down and look at it and make yourself feel upset if you want to, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. you are certainly doing something different than anyone else your age, really, who's not in high performance sport.
Yeah, so do you think that's what's sustained you to be in the sport for as long as you have, where you're able to kind of take a step back and reflect that this is a privilege or that you're grateful to do it on a daily basis? And so, and how, what you spoke about, how you have these other athletes who have retired and then they come back and tell you their experiences, like where have you been able to kind of get that reflection of, wow, this is really cool that we get to do this? Because I find, even for myself, and I haven't been on the team for that long, but it's so easy to be in the mentality of like, what's next, you know, like always pushing forward. And there's so much within the sport to push towards. But how can you, or how have you been able to like keep yourself focused and determined and motivated in what you do on a daily basis over such a sustained period of time?
Yeah. Well, for me, it's sort of like, you know, if you were to think about a quadrennial as like a generation of athletes or something like that, like I'm very lucky in that I've gotten to work with, you know, 3 generations of athletes now. And with each time that I've, you know, been at the training center when there's like group X of athletes, you know, you forge just an unbelievable bond with those guys and girls, and you know, you work towards the same goal and there's all this hardship and challenge and stuff to overcome and like just amazing times. And then I'm spoiled enough that I've gotten to do it now 3 times mm-hmm. with a bonus COVID year here. So yeah, I feel very fortunate. And those those moments where it's the worst of the worst and where it's the best of the best are just, you know, they're equally special because you just, it's hard to find them anywhere else from what I've heard.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's just, I feel incredibly lucky and it's amazing how fast it feels like time has passed. And you know, when I pause and reflect on all the amazing people that I've gotten to work with while doing this, it's like, I just wouldn't trade it for anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I liked your point about how you said that, the bonds that you create within that quadrennial, and then you move on to the next quadrennial and you create another relationship with those people. How have you been able to sort of like categorize one set of team values and beliefs in one quadrennial and then move into a whole other quadrennial of it being completely different, or have they been completely different? And if so, then what were those differences?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's completely different because rowing is fundamentally, you know, not changing too much. Obviously things are moving forward scientifically and biomechanically and everything. Like there's a lot of technology that's coming in and physiologists are just getting smarter. But a lot of the challenges definitely remain the same. So yeah, it's I guess those team values that you're kind of speaking on would probably reflect the leadership. And I've been part of, you know, three different leaderships now. You know, we had Mike Spracklin, Martin McElroy, and now Dick Tonks, and my coach is Terry Paul. So yeah, it's just, each one of them has had, you know, subtle differences, but the fundamentals remain the same. And so it's, I don't know. I guess as an athlete, you're just looking to adapt to what the coach wants out of you, because ultimately their decisions kind of push you into whichever boat you're going to be in. And so there's a little bit of that adaptation, but yeah, I mean, fundamentally speed is speed. So
mm-hmm.
you just got to keep going as fast as you can. And you forge those bonds with the guys because you're just out there, you know, staring across at each other, going as hard as you can against each other, seeing who's going to blink first. And then every time that happens, you know, the bond gets a little bit stronger. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then how was that transition of like shifting from those coaches, and building like a whole other relationship? Like, have you found that you've been able to, get that trust from every coach that you've been in, or like buy into what they want from you? Especially as a more experienced athlete, I think it probably gets more difficult if you have a new coach coming in and being like, I want you to do this now, and you've been doing something else for like 5 years. Mm-hmm. How have you dealt with experiences like that?
Yeah, well, I guess for me, like from a very young age, you know, like I would listen to my coach and have success. So it was always like instilled in me to, trust my coach. Like I had an amazing couple of coaches at the Kingston Rowing Club, and John Armitage and Nathan Splinter, and the supporting cast there. And then super fortunate to go to the University of Washington and have amazing coaches in Bob Ernst and Michael Callahan, and then come to the training center and finally get to be coached by my, you know, I guess not rowing idol, but like a rowing god in Canada at the time, because I was going through high school at the time where they started winning world championships in the eight.
And you're talking about Mike Spracklin.
Yeah, Mike Spracklin. Yeah. And then, so it was just like, I was so fortunate to just listen to my coaches and get to go fast.
Mm-hmm. How was that experience with him? I feel like I really want to get him on the podcast at some point. Cause I mean, yeah. I've heard so many stories about him, and I watched, he has like a DVD on the Mike Spracklin approach.
Yeah.
Very fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, being coached by him was a dream. Like quite literally, like I dreamt of being coached by him when I was in high school, because, you know, like I said, I had a great, couple of coaches, and actually my biology teachers also helped me with my physiology from a young age. So they were pushing me in the right direction and were like, you know, this is possible. You could go to the Olympics. So then as soon as that was in my head, that was when I started chasing it. And that's when I was, you know, aware of Mike Spracklin and Kevin Light, who made that rowing philosophy video, also had a bunch of videos just on YouTube, and I would watch those with my teammates. And so, yeah, finally being able to be coached by Mike was just an incredible feeling. And there was guys who were still in my boat in 2012 that I watched in some of those videos in high school. So it was amazing. Wow. To, you know, I can remember sitting, it's a really fond memory of mine, sitting at a table after the racing in Bled, Slovenia in 2011. And I had Brian Price on one side of me and Kevin Light on the other side of me. And I was just having a beer with them because we'd just gotten our bronze medal in Bled and qualified ourselves for the Olympics. And wow. It was just a surreal moment to be sitting with those two guys. And I remember telling them that.
Yeah.
Probably a little bit corny, but
no,
yeah,
no.
It was amazing for sure. So yeah, getting to be coached by Mike was incredible. He was, you know, I often talk about him as like, he's like a wizard of the sport, you know, and there's just a few of those out there. So.
And more technical speaking, or what do you mean? Or just his ability to kind of tap into people's potential?
Yeah. In every sense, like technical, physical, his ability to get a bunch of guys pointed in the exact same direction and, you know, have everybody kind of thinking the same way, and have the same attitude towards racing. It was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so cool. What was that? I want to talk about actually selection for 2012. What was that selection like, and how were the guys selected? And from the qualifiers moving then into the Olympics, did that boat change a lot?
We had Malcolm Howard come in because he was racing the single for a couple of years leading up to 2011. And he was trying to make his way with two sticks in his hands, and he decided to come back to the eight. And so after that, things didn't change around too much, but selection was just, everybody knew that it was every single day. So, you know, if you were in the top four pairs, you were probably going to be in the eight for the eights row when it was on the schedule. So everyone knew that, you know, if you did really well in the work runs all week long in the pairs, that you were going to be in the eight mm-hmm. for that weekend, like 4x2K or power strokes or whatever it might've been. People were just, we're pushing daily because it was kind of that cutthroat, I guess. It was just an everyday selection thing. And then there was always, you know, a couple of close athletes where we needed to sort it out and do a little bit of seat racing, but it was usually only, you know, one or two guys that maybe needed to be, I guess, checked, or Mike just wanted to see what it looked like at race pace or what have you. So yeah, it was selection was sort of every day.
Yeah, wow. And then when was the boat solidified?
I guess officially when RCA named it, I guess, but
yeah.
I remember people always saying, you know, you'll know you're in the boat when you're at the start line.
Yeah, that's such a classic for saying.
Yeah, yeah. That was always like what the elders when I was just a young guy on the team would say, so that's what I'll say now.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. You only know when you're at the start. Yeah, Craig always said that to us in university. And it was like, he was like, well, you only know, really. And even if you're on the plane going, and that at the time it's like Canadian University Championships, it's like, you never know.
Yeah.
And what do you think about that mentality? Because, I mean, I personally agree with it. I think it keeps everyone, and whether or not you think that you're really driving and giving it your all, I think knowing that it could be taken away from you at any time forces you to get in that mentality. But I think it could also go the other way, where if you're not capable to really harness that and still perform on a daily basis, then the stress might take its toll and then you can't perform. So
yeah, no, I don't think it necessarily has to be one way or the other, to be honest. That was the way that Mike set it up here. And so the whole environment was kind of geared towards that. And so it worked, and it certainly makes people racers and makes them hungry and, has people chasing exactly what they want in the way that Mike wants them to. So I think that that's, you know, the way that it was done here. But I've also had the opportunity to train with the Danish men's four.
Oh, really?
When we were in Italy, training out of the Australian Institute of Sport. And those guys just had just a completely different attitude than us. And it wasn't wrong, because those guys are, you know, multiple Olympic champions, world champions.
Wow.
And they just have an incredible legacy. And I'm not, I can't speak to how the selection went for them, but it just seems like a totally different world that they live in compared to us. You
what
know?
Was, what was their approach?
Well, laid back attack, you know, we'd returned from a training session and it had, you know, gone, I remember it had gone like not as well as we wanted to. And we returned and those guys were sitting out at the same hotel on the balcony, just having a beer. And we started talking with them and we asked them how their row went. And they said, oh, it wasn't going well. So we just came in and had a beer instead.
No way.
And we went out and we just suffered through it and just, you know, killed ourselves and, you know, just felt like a dog that had been beat too much. And then we come back and these guys are just having a beer, trying to forget about the 2 kilometers that they rode.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Wow.
So, yeah. I remember too, we were doing this 30-minute test and we were just absolutely blowing our brains out, you know, going under 140 out of 20 for 30 minutes. And they walked into the Australian Institute of Sport and their jaws were just dropping watching us hitting these numbers at rate 20. And they just couldn't believe what we were doing. And we were like, yeah, we do this every month. Like,
yeah, wow.
It's just a very different approach, you know? And they're so successful and that's really cool. It's something that I'd be interested to have had the opportunity to try myself, mm-hmm. see how that would work for an athlete such as myself and just broaden my own, I guess, experience with how to make a boat go fast, because they certainly did it. I mean, we would train alongside them. We did a couple training sessions and some of the lower rate stuff, we would, you know, be able to push away from them. But then when that rate came up and we were kind of struggling still as a four and suffering from a couple of injuries, but those guys just kicked our butts.
Wow.
Out on the water, which was humbling and you know, really let us know that there was more on the table for us to figure out. So yeah, that was a special group of dudes.
Wow. Yeah, that's crazy. Wow. Mm-hmm. Has your approach changed throughout your career and like with different quads? I know we touched on being a part of different dynamics of different quads, but like, do you see yourself as an athlete that has kind of changed your mindset or your approach to training on a daily basis?
I mean, training has changed so much on a daily basis for me, but I think, you know, when I first got to the training center, it was all about, you know, making the boat go fast and winning work runs every day. And so that was my focus. I just wanted to win everything because I had to prove myself, especially to the guys that were already at the training center, because I came in kind of 2009, 2010, mm-hmm. years after I'd finished up at UW. And so I was trying to just win everything to gain the respect of my peers and gain the respect of my new coach. So in that sense, it was all about, you know, win everything. And so I tried to do that. And then the next 4 years after 2012, there wasn't as much side-by-side stuff every single day. We would have 90 minutes on the water and you had to have your heart rate in a certain zone. And so I would just be, you know, trying to nail that. I would try to do that perfectly. And so I'd want to have, you know, exactly 90 minutes between heart rate 156 and 168 or something like that, mm-hmm. in the single, and just make sure that I was doing every little thing correctly. And now as Terry Paul is our coach, it's a little bit of both, which is kind of a nice balance in my opinion, because like I'm the fittest I've ever been and we still get that side-by-side training. So we do get that, you know, super competitive couple of moments in the week where it's just side-by-side racing, and then you also get those long rows where you're trying to build that cardio base. And each quad has been a little bit different, and so my approach certainly has changed to sort of match the individuals around me and whoever's coaching me as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very unique quality and important quality, especially in the sport, because everybody is so different. And like you touched on, different coaches, different athletes. From the start, you had to prove yourself, and now maybe you're more one of the more mature athletes on the team, and maybe they're in the position your teammates are of being like, oh, I just want to prove myself to Will, you know, which they probably are. So that's kind of fun to look back at that.
Yeah.
In terms of uncertainty with this past year, how has that been, having an extra year and being able to train more together and figure out what you guys need to do, but then at the same time not really knowing what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, certainly receiving the news about COVID and everything getting canceled, and you know, our qualifying regatta first went down while the Olympics was still going, or like going to be going forwards. It was really hard, especially because I was maybe at that time convinced that that last winter of training was going to be my last one. Mm. And so coming to grips with that, because there had been lots of trials and tribulations throughout that year with, you know, we didn't qualify the eight, and then our team sort of got slashed apart, which was really hard after the NRC regatta. Just so many guys had been cut, which was just super hard to watch. All your, you know, buddies that you just trained alongside for so long, and then just have their dreams dashed like that. I thought that was certainly one of the hardest things I've had to witness and go through. And then, you know, the uncertainty of another year, and you know, you're, as an unqualified crew, you're saying, okay, I'm going to train this whole year and maybe not go to the Olympics. So you're putting all your chips on the table. And so anyone who's been in an unqualified crew now is, you know, going all in twice.
Yeah.
So it's pretty, it's a bit of an emotional thing to, you know, hear that news. And then you probably only have a moment where you're like, oh, like, what am I going to do? And then you're like, well, I'm obviously going to go finish this thing off, so I guess I'm doing another year of training. And so that was certainly really difficult. And yeah, I definitely remember just climbing on my bike and smashing the pedals as hard as I could, trying to, mm-hmm. and just thinking the whole, you know, 3 hours that I was out there riding. And yeah, that was a tough time. A lot of uncertainty, but one of the things that I really, you know, enjoyed realizing was that I was just going to get to work with so many special people for at least another year. You know, like, we have such an incredible support staff and incredible coaches, and I'm just surrounded by amazing people. So that was definitely something to look forward to, because mm-hmm. You know, if I ever do leave the sport, probably not.
Love to hear it.
You know, I'll be sad to not be able to work with a lot of the individuals that I've been lucky enough to work with, and, you know, having such an amazing support team in Rowing Canada, all the managers that take care of us so well. It's like, you know, yeah, just we're lucky.
Mm-hmm. And in those moments of like, of feeling that like what you talked about with your teammates being cut and facing like such adversity, how, like, what are your first steps in those times of uncertainty or just frustration or just sadness? Like, how do you actually get yourself back up and then be able to perform or work the next day?
I guess the first step is always forward, you know, like, you just have to, your goal doesn't change, I guess. Maybe the boat class in which you're attempting to achieve the goal in changes. But I guess it's a little bit of compartmentalization, you know, like, it was super hard to watch guys with such a bright future in rowing Canada get cut and, you know, get to have to miss out on experiences that I've been fortunate enough to have. So that was really hard for sure. And it's just, you know, you deal with that when you have time to deal with that, but then you still have to keep training and keep pushing because your goal remains the same. And, you know, to give anything less than your best would be to, you know, not honor their, their rowing career, you know, and everything that they did. So it's just, yeah, it's a super bitter moment to have to go through, but you still just need to keep pushing forwards. And, you know, I hope that some of those guys maybe will even come back, but I know that's a big ask once you step away as someone who's done it before. So, yeah. But yeah, no, it was hard, but you definitely just have to keep taking the steps forward to achieve the goals that you want to and around with the guys that were still around.
Yeah. I mean, I think it speaks to your character first that, that's something that was, you say that, that such an adversity in your life was actually happening to somebody else in around you, which is quite interesting because I think for people, it's people would classify their adversity as something that they're facing right on. And so I think that's speaks a lot to your character and how much you value your teammates. And so I wonder if like when you are faced with adversity that's directly impacting you, how do you then overcome that? It seems like it might be easier than when you see other people because you can't really control their narrative, but you can have more control of what your narrative is.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, any adversity that I've faced, I think the best way forward for me has just been, you know, trying to, you know, run directly through that brick wall or whatever. And, you know, continue to listen to the guidance of the more experienced people around me and, just keep pushing because at the end of the day, like I was saying earlier, you know, speed is speed. And so you just have to keep trying to go fast and there's always going to be really hard moments on the journey to, you know, trying to become an Olympic champion. Yeah, so head first, I guess, is the way that you approach those obstacles in your way.
And I mean, it probably leads back to our very initial question about your parents and like having that support system around you. Do you think that you have, I mean, obviously it sounds like you have a lot of really supportive people around you. Do you feel as though that you also have that sort of like self-belief that you're able to do this or and see other people do it? Like if I bring yourself back to high school, what was that trajectory then of going into university and seeing like, oh, these things are possible? Was it just like these slow stepping stones moving forward?
Yeah, I was certainly like a real product of the development system in rowing Canada at the time, which I think was amazing and led by my current coach, Terry Paul. Yeah, from an early age, I had, you know, my coaches and, you know, biology teachers who were doing my lactate testing in high school and stuff, telling me what was possible. And, you know, then, you know, I'd finish out a year and my coach would say, all right, we're going to drive you to this selection regatta. And I remember thinking that I was getting a chance to go to CanAmex, but actually it was a junior national team trial. And I ended up losing in the pair to two guys that I would end up rowing with later at juniors. And I just thought like, oh, well, it was just like gravy on top for me that year. Like I didn't get it, but so what, I'll get it next year. And then, yeah, so it was just like another stepping stone of, you know, trying to keep pushing on to the next thing. And so, the next year I did get to go to the junior national team and the year after that, same junior national team, and then getting a scholarship to UW. And the questions that I was asking the coaches there were, you know, is this going to be something that helps me to get to the national team and gets me to my next goal? And, you know, Michael Callahan, who was the freshman coach at the time, was adamant that it was, and he had just come off being the spare at the Olympics in 2004. And so he was someone who knew what it took. And, you know, Rob Gibson, one of the guys that I rode with in 2012 and in high school and in 2016, one of my teammates, he was in the quad. He'd been there before me, and he spoke so highly of everything. And so I knew that it was going to be a good decision. And just its proximity to Victoria was also great for just popping up and, you know, attending speed orders or something. It was just, you know, one step after another. I did 2 years of juniors, 4 years of under 23s, and then joined the senior team after that in 2010.
Wow.
So for me, it was just kind of one step in front of another, stepping stones, as you said. So, and led incredibly by, Terry Paul, who, you know, has his imprint on a lot of athletes who have come around the same era as me, and a lot of athletes that'll come after me for sure.
Mm-hmm. And so with the ultimate goal of going then to the Olympics, like I think people who aren't in professional sport, or even if you are, is like, how do you deal with having such a massive event every 4 years? And how do you deal with all those small goals moving forward with knowing that this is the ultimate goal at the end? Like, how do you not focus on that ultimate goal every day or get caught up in that when you have to be working on all these other things?
Yeah, well, it's interesting how your perspective changes after you go to one of them, because then you see the big picture a little more clearly, because it's impossible to see it beforehand, despite, you know, Malcolm Howard and Brian Price and Burnsy's best efforts to describe what the Olympics were going to be like. Nothing's quite like actually going there, obviously. So, once you go there and you do it, then you sort of understand the process from start to finish. And so you can see and tweak how you approach every day. And I think with your age as well, like that sort of impacts how you're able to train every single day, and just your awareness of your own body as well is just, shifts. So there is a perspective switch in that, I would say. Yeah. And before 2012, you know, everything I wanted was to just win. I wanted to win everything. And that might've been partially about how it was geared at the training center, but it was just about winning, winning, winning. And, now, you know, I was just saying to the guys the other day as we drove up to Quamichin, like, it's, for me, it's about achieving my best performance, because, you know, at the end of the day, win, lose, or draw, if you have your best performance, you can be satisfied with it,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, I felt like we had probably our best performance we could in London. I don't think we had our best performance in Rio. And so, you know, that's the taste that stays in your mouth more, is when you don't have the performance that you think you're capable of. And so now, like, I believe that my best performance coincides with winning an Olympic gold medal. And, you know, that's my belief. And so to me, I want to go out and get my best performance. And I think that helps me focus on doing all the little things right, instead of being maybe blinded by just being overly competitive, because there are times when, you know, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I still think, you know, in those situations, if I'm putting my best foot forward, then I'll come out on top. So.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. And, that's a very fundamental approach for myself, which is, at the end of the day, I can only control what I can control. And it's something that I'm constantly working on, which is trying to figure out, like, how can I go and have, do the best that I can on a daily basis and be okay with it, whether it's the result you want or not. And I often think that even if I go and race and I had a really good race or I'm proud of something or whatever moment, and then you look around and you realize, oh, was it actually that outcome that you wanted? Instantly, you're like, oh, shit, it's not enough.
Yeah.
You know, and like, how do you deal with that? Or have you experienced, you've probably experienced that multiple times, right? And, mm-hmm. and like, yeah, how do you move forward from that and to be looking for more or feel like you've given everything? Oh, it's not enough. Okay, I guess I got to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why, you know, it's probably so important that it's once every 4 years, because, you know, we know that there's enough opportunity for preparation. So you hope that your preparation is correct when the opportunity knocks. And, you know, there's plenty of times now in my career when there was an opportunity and, you know, I wasn't prepared enough for it. And so I didn't get the result that I wanted. But then you can reflect and, you know, that was on me. And like the first one that comes to mind is, you know, I remember when I was first joining the training center and I just come up from UW and I managed to get a seat race against Doug Chima, a guy who I would row with in 2012. And it was in a four and I lost by 1 second. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I mean, I didn't win that seat race, but I've only just arrived here. So, you know, I'm okay with that. And I know that I need to go back and start training to try to better my results. And that team went off and, you know, went to a World Cup and they got a bronze medal. And so, you know, you just sort of thinking about it plainly and logically, and you can, you know, as long as you're doing everything that you can do and you're able to think about, you know, what's actually happening with, you know, common sense and logic, then you can sort of sort yourself out and like solve the problem, I guess, you know, like, mm-hmm. and I guess that's maybe been an approach of mine, is to just, you know, one stroke at a time, you're just trying to make it a little bit better. And it's a long game. And I guess that's why it's so special that it's over 4 years, because then you get that one chance to do it perfectly, that one opportunity. And, you know, you do the preparation check, I guess, and see mm-hmm. who's wasted the most time. I like Conlon said that one time, everybody comes together in the summertime and sees who wasted the most time.
Nice. Yeah, it's so true. And when you talk about your 2012 finish and you say that you think that that was like the best performance you could have put out, and you guys got the result from that, what was that feeling? Was it like thinking, wow, it was like all my work that brought to that moment? Or like, what was the actual feeling of by the time you guys crossed the line? Was it like relief or?
Yeah, it was relief. It's mm-hmm. funny that you say that. Yeah, it's just, I remember looking across and seeing the line to my left and then the other boats to my right, and just sorting it out in my head that we'd gotten a silver medal, and as if Brian screaming it at us wasn't enough. But it was, yeah, just relief. I was like, oh my goodness, like, I'm so glad we didn't mess that up, because I don't know if you've watched the whole regatta of ours, but we were the second slowest boat in the heats, and I don't know how far behind we were, but I can distinctly remember being waked out by the TV launches in the heat, which is not a fun feeling at your mm-hmm. first Olympics. Yeah. I wouldn't recommend it. yeah, so we did struggle with consistency at times. And so for us to be able to bounce back from, you know, essentially being in last, to go through the rep and have a, you know, a performance that sort of got us back on track, and then to be able to go out and execute everything that we sort of said we would do on that finals day, and, you know, to have it be led by Brian so well and everybody executing everything that he was saying, it was just a really special feeling. And mm-hmm. yeah, relief is the word that came to mind.
Yeah, interesting. So yeah. More of like relief that what you thought was possible you were able to do, or because of the races leading up that you're like, okay, I can do that.
Yeah, it's more relief that we didn't screw it up almost. Really, you know, yeah. It's just like, oh, thank God. Like, mm-hmm. And then, you know, you start having these realizations that, you know, one of those Olympic medals on the dock is yours, and you're just, yeah, it's an incredible feeling.
So yeah. Awesome. Yeah. And then what was that trajectory going then into 2016 and your feeling after that final?
So, I mean, it's a real shame that we dealt with so many injuries with that boat, just because we just didn't quite have the time together in the boat to really, you know, get to the point where when the chips were down, we were all going to be able to react the exact same way and, be able to, you know, come together in the hardest moment of that 4 years, to not be able to, I guess, is just a really, tough feeling to even just sit here and try to remember.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys qualify the year prior or?
Yeah, we did. We qualified in fourth position, which, we weren't super satisfied with because we'd, gone and raced in the semifinal and raced the Italians, who went on to win that race, I'm pretty sure. And, did they win that race? I think they did. Yeah. And so we were pushing them right to the line in that semifinal. Maybe they got a bronze, I forget, but we were pushing them right to the line and one of the guys in the boat caught a crab.
Oh.
And so I was sitting there looking at this crab in front of me and then looking around at the boats around me. And this was like, if you cross the line in front of enough people here, you're going to have qualified for the Olympics. So it switched from, you know, trying to beat these Italians to, and we were moving on them too. Like if you watch the race, it was like, oh, this is going to happen. And then we just caught this crab, boat stopping, but we managed to just, you know, switch into recovery mode and get the boat across the line. And, that was a tough race. And then we qualified in fourth, which was super upsetting just because I knew we were capable of getting a medal. And that's such a good feeling. Like I can remember getting our bronze medal in Bled going into the Olympics. It was like, okay, like this is it. Mm-hmm. We're the standard here. And so it was really tough to come away with a fourth, but having gotten the qualifying spot there, like that was incredible. And then, yeah.
And then the guys stayed the same going into the Olympics?
Yeah.
The crew?
Yeah. We had the same four guys, moved the lineup around a little bit, but, yeah, it was same four guys.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Does that happen often?
Catching a crab in a race?
Oh, no. But keeping the lineup. Also, for people who don't know what catching a crab is, you can explain.
Well, yeah, it's when, maybe the blade has been improperly buried at the catch with where it's not quite square, and so it will get dragged down into the water, or maybe you don't quite have the blade completely feathered or over feathered, and then you just catch the water and basically the blade gets dragged behind the boat and pushes the boat sideways and it's a whole mess. You don't want to do it.
Yeah, it is rough.
Yeah.
The crew staying the same. Is that normal? Is that rare? I mean, I'm only witnessing what's going on here now.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a bit more like performance dependent. I think, you know, we were obviously so close in one of the races to grabbing that top, you know, A final qualifying spot, which would have been, you know, a real boost to our confidence because we'd had some mixed results coming in or like the 2 years previous, really. So to get that, it would have been great. But yeah, sorry, I forget what your original question was. If the boat lineup stays the
same.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you have success, if you've got a world champion boat, you're going to want them to stay together. But if everyone goes and gets beat down, then probably make some switches.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
And now if you bring it into present day, how do you feel? How's the crew feeling now moving forward? I know you guys have had a couple obstacles recently. And
yeah, no, it's tough. Because we have such small numbers on the team, which is kind of a bummer because that's a lot of the issues that we ran into in the last quadrennial was taking away athletes from the center and the group, because, you know, you do get these periods where you run into injuries. So, you know, it's a mistake that was made last quad in my mind, and then it's a mistake that's been made again this quad, in my opinion. But luckily, in our group, we do have a group of six, and it's been unfortunate. We've had two guys go down with some injuries right now, but the two guys who were the spares have really stepped up and, you know, slotted in really well, and we've been able to keep the four on the water, which has been great. But obviously, yeah, my heart goes out to the guys right now that are just kind of dealing with those injuries and doing the best they can to just get themselves healthy.
And do you feel as though that you need anything in order to put your best performance down moving forward?
I guess just what we have now, I suppose, is just the continued support of, you know, the team and all of the you know, practitioners that are going to keep us healthy and on the water. And like in the last couple of days, we've proved that we can go fast. And so just the support of, you know, getting over to the qualifier and having everything that we need so that when, you know, that opportunity comes knocking, we can bust through that door. So just the continued support of Rowing Canada and everyone around us and our fantastic training partners.
Nice. And what else do you feel like you want to get out of this sport?
Oh, that's a good question. I guess for me, as like an older athlete, I hope that I can really instill some of the things that I think are really important to the younger athletes, just as it was done to me by, you know, the senior athletes of that time. And then I'm still out here chasing my best performance on the day. And so, you know, just try to go out and achieve that. And then I think I'll be happy with the result when that finally happens. So,
Oh, that's so awesome. Before I cut it out, I'll actually tell a story. And I was going to tell it when you were talking about how you, when you were in high school and you had heard about these stories on the national team. But I mean, I only started rowing in my first year of university, but in that summer and in those next three summers, I went back to Kingston and rowed in Kingston with a club there. And I remember going back into, you know, the boathouse. It's pretty outdated. Yeah. But I still remember going back into the change room, and on my way back, there was a wall. I mean, I would look at it as like a wall of legacy, and there was a photo of you and Robbie, and of you guys. And I remember reading it. It was you guys in the newspaper, and I was like, man, that is so cool. And so I feel very privileged and honored to sit here right now and have this conversation with you. And I wish you nothing but the best. And it's been really cool for me to have this extra year, because I feel like I didn't even really know you guys at all last year by the time it ended. So it's been really awesome to have you guys as training partners. And I also think that your group, which is a big philosophy of mine, is like, we should be able to have fun while we're pursuing this sort of excellence. And, and I love that that's fostered in the group that we have right now. And I think it can do a lot of good, and that's, I believe that wholeheartedly. And I've been wanting to prove it, my whole life, which is like, you know, I want to have a team where everyone feels like they're having so much fun and they're able to come out on top.
Totally. I mean, that's when people ask me, like, what would you tell a young athlete today? And it's always just, I think, have fun. Like, the day you stop having fun with it is probably the day you should stop doing it altogether and find something else that's fun, because life's kind of too short. But also, in the words of Jake Wetzel, it doesn't always have to be fun. So
true. You can have, you can go fast and then be like, oh, that was fun.
Sometimes when it sucks, it's the best too, you know. It's like, it's just the best job I ever had, you know. Like, people pay to feel as awful as I do right now. So definitely need to be having fun. And that's one thing I love about our group, is that it's just fast and loose, you know, like everybody's just having a great time and pushing really hard. And I do think that you can do both. And I look forward to it every day.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Right on.
Thanks again, Will, for taking the time to sit down and sharing a conversation. One thing that I really appreciate about this platform is having the opportunity to get to know people even more than what I would have if I didn't have them on the podcast. If you really enjoyed this conversation, please follow us online and send us a comment if you have any requests for certain guests to join us. Thank you to my systems engineer, Cindy Payne, Claire Briand for background music, Christine Roper for joining me this week, and a huge thank you to all of you for taking the time to listen. Come back in 2 weeks and we'll have another special guest for you. Go get after it. Enjoy the day. Thanks, everyone.